Hey, little stinkers, until we figure out the future of the show, any upcoming premium content is going to be free to everyone. I just want to say thank you for supporting the show. Hello, welcome to Second Wind. Here we go. My name's Gus. I'm the Dungeon Master for Tales from the Stinky Dragon. With me,
Chris Damaris, who plays Barney Farney. Micah, the editor, writer, composer for this show.
And, more importantly, birthday boy.
That's birthday true. Boy!
It is my birthday.
We just finished recording episode 43 of the Grotesque campaign of Tales from the Stinky Dragon. The party finally exited Clawstred, got to Fang Pick. What do you think about it? What's going on here, Chris?
I mean, there's still a lot of questions, and I feel like we're slowly getting answers and pieces to the puzzle, but it's like, you know, have you ever done a puzzle?
Yes,
no.
I have.
And there's all these pieces, and you start, and like you're sorting them by color and stuff, and you're like, oh yeah, these probably go over here, these probably go over here, these probably go over there, and you're like, oh, it'll start getting easier as you start putting these pieces in, but it doesn't really get easy until like right at the end when you're like, yeah. I feel like it's like that. We're just like organizing puzzle pieces, and slowly
you've got all your edge pieces done, and now you're just working on like filling out the middle. Yeah.
And then the cat comes over and bats off.
Oh, man. The last puzzle I did, missing one piece.
Really?
Yeah. It was at a coffee shop, and I nearly tore the coffee shop apart looking for that last piece.
You never found it?
No.
How long were you at the coffee shop? You did a puzzle.
Well, it was like halfway done. And then it was like, we sat there. I was waiting for a bus.
It was a long wait for a bus.
Yeah. Yeah, started doing the puzzle, and didn't finish it. Anyway, what's up?
So I think you know, every time we do Second Wind, we prime the audience for questions, so things that we can talk about, and we try to talk about some of our fun moments, favorite parts of the episode. And I think that he's not here, but I think Mateed trying to get hemo pieces from every Sfratu was a great running gag. Mm-hmm. It was really an inspired piece of playing.
John did that before, not with tithing, like in a religious sense, but he bet it. That's what he did. He bet in the brawl
in the last episode.
I was like, John wants some money.
He's going for it.
That, honestly, I thought the most clever moment was John putting the fruit in
the mort apple
in the stew.
In the stew?
Whatever. The blood buckets.
Okay, yeah, the blood buckets.
I thought that was really smart, really clever.
Yeah, it was a good idea.
We should play a game sometime and just have, like, play the whole session and then have Chris write down everything that happened.
Oh.
And just see what happened. See, line up the two modules.
It would be like when he draws a map when we go somewhere and then seeing what he drew versus what the reality actually is, which is one of my favorite running gags that we do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you another question, Chris. What happened to Eddie? Y'all had him cornered in the sepulcher.
Was Eddie in that coffin that got drug around?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I was like, "What? I got it!" Like I had that like burp. My mic just rose. I was like, "That's the only thing I could think of because we searched everything. There were no trap doors or anything. And then, like that little helper dude was like, "I'm getting out of here," and drug the coffin away. And I was like, That's probably it. But why would Eddie want to go in there?
Eddie was in there? I didn't know that.
Hmm? I think you broke Chris's brain.
Wait, Eddie, what? Wait, was that Eddie? Gosh, darn it.
I like...
Who's Eddie?
Yeah. Have we met an NPC named Eddie?
I don't know anymore.
Yeah. So I think there was a lot of fun exploration. So, you know, episodes like this always make me a little nervous because sometimes, you know, Micah, when you have a module, it's very clear. There's a very like clear flow to it. The party's going to do this. The party's going to go here. They're going to do this. Like it's a very linear approach to it. Episodes like this is very wide open. Mm-hmm. It's just like an area with different rooms. It's like, and it's just descriptions of the rooms. It's a lot more like I feel like at the mercy of the party and what they're going to do and how are they going to try to break things and poke at the edges and do whatever it is that they do?
Yeah.
So I always get a little nervous.
I think it's it's funny that I've had multiple people like in the cast and crew like mention that this is a unique arc, the way we've played it. And I think part of that is like, yeah, it's one thing to do a sandbox out in the wilderness. Like, you can do that, and it's very possible. It takes a lot of preparation.
Yes.
But if you do it in an enclosed space where it is limited, there are like a finite amount of rooms in this place, then it's a lot more fill in the boxes. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot more prep, but it's a lot more manageable, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah, you can let them run free and just, like, see what happens.
Yeah, and I think that that really came across in the way the party interacted with the Sfratu a lot this episode, specifically where, you know, at first they're hiding and they're afraid. Then, Elga comes up with this idea to play hide and seek with them. And then by the end of it, you know, they're sitting next to them on pews, stealing money from them, and then trying to relieve them from their duty, telling them they're off the watch and
I feel like
taking
we got
over.
Better at dealing with them.
Yeah, I was talking with someone who's DMing as well, just started DMing, and like they were saying like they weren't expecting the party to do this or that. I'm like, yep, that's D&D.
Yeah. So like sometimes, you know, they come across this like, I really don't think this should work or this should happen, but the roles are good and I like the idea.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure, we'll go with it. We'll see what happens. What's the worst that can happen? You know, if everyone's still
having
fun.
They win, guys.
Right. Oh. In the end, as long as everyone's having fun,
that's it.
Okay, so I want to hit up a few questions that we primed from the audience here for everyone here. So Lady Ghost Ghost asks, when playing for the first time or when writing your first campaign, what's the most common mistake? Is there anything obviously you should think of and or avoid?
I can say from whenever I wrote The Chosen Ones, there were places where I over-prepared, where I was like, I wrote out too much. I was like, oh, and also it might be worth, you know, we do shorter sessions, but like I over-prepared and over had all these different things, and there's no way they were all going to get to it. I think also one thing I realized is when you go into a location, not to over-describe the location, because it can be like overwhelming for like to try and visualize and think through everything, but just like give a baseline thing. And then as the party explores, then you reveal more for what they look into, you know?
Because then I think when you leave it open-ended and the party's asking questions, you find out what they're interested in. You can fill in those blanks as opposed to like filling in blanks that don't need to be filled.
Yeah. Like you don't have to describe every little detail of everything in the giant room.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I learned early on as a DM or writer is like, you're going to make mistakes. I think that's a farce thinking that like, you can know all the rules, you can know exactly what the party's going to do or have an answer for everything the party wants an answer for. And that's not true. Give yourself a break. Like especially when you're DMing for the first time and it's a homebrew campaign or something like that, like you're going to make mistakes. And if you need to take a break, or if you need to just say like, I don't know the answer right now, but we can answer that after, or make up something and just go with that for the time being. And sometimes that's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But as a player, I think there's a couple of like home rules that you want to keep in mind. Where like just if you want the party to work together, that's one. So don't take the spotlight all the time and steamroll over what else someone else wants to do. And make sure everybody's having fun. Like role play if you're comfortable with that. If you're not, like maybe say this is what my character does and be descriptive about it, that kind of thing.
I think another thing too is, and this is more on a player side, but if you're DMing, maybe like whenever you're on session zero, maybe encouraging your players to not, there's like a trope of like the lone wolf who like doesn't like talking to people. And it's like, well, that's not necessarily good dynamic for a party.
Yeah.
You want, you know, a character who wants to engage with people because wants to, you know, meet the party. Because otherwise, if they're just a lone wolf who like doesn't want to talk,
why are they here?
Then it's like, yeah, they're just not.
Then you can play a solo D&D sesh with your DM.
But yeah, encouraging players to, you know, create a character that's has a reason to want to talk to the other players. Yeah,
that's a good one. To Micah's earlier point about like making mistakes and, you know, looking stuff up, I've been playing D&D over 30 years across many editions. In this episode, last episode, I still had to look up what specifically does stunned say? What does that entail? Don't be afraid to look it up. Be like, yeah, I don't know. Let's read it. Let's find out. And Sometimes you come across a weird thing, like in the last episode, like, yeah, a flying creature stunned, does it fall? You know, yeah. And sometimes you just gotta go with it and figure it out. And don't be afraid to open up a book and read.
Yeah, I play with some people that have been playing for years as well. And I haven't played for a long, long time. I've only been playing for a couple years now, or a few years now. And that person that I play with has always added their proficiency bonus to damage, which is not in the rules. No. It means always hit really like high damage. And so we finally pointed that to them. They've been playing for years, I'm pretty sure. I was like, that's actually not how you play.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have a shield with a bow and arrow.
Yeah. The proficiency bonus should help you hit.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help
it means
you
you're good
harder.
At something.
Right. Interesting.
But it's just rules. Like that's why you reference them. You have a book or you have a cheat sheet or something like that is always really helpful.
Mm-hmm. How'd you
or
a table that of contents. Out?
How'd you figure that out?
How did that come about that y'all
because they do the math out loud.
Oh.
And so like we don't use digital dice. We like roll everything in and do stats and stuff. And like the way they were adding things up didn't make sense.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Or I think also they said it to someone else like, oh, you should add like this to your thing because you're this, right? You're proficient in this. I'm like, no, that's not true.
That doesn't work.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like the backlog of like
all the damage that they took is turned on them.
They're not actually dead.
Yeah,
they're all here now.
Yeah.
I think this is a very pertinent question, especially considering the episode that we just recorded here. From Emily Womily asks, "What is or is there any presence of gods or deities in Groteth?" And we've talked about this in the past about the Great Maw and the Great Paw.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that now, you know, in this episode specifically, the party's finding like religious temples and ceremonies that they're coming across. So I think it's starting to get fleshed out a bit more. Maybe not necessarily the Great Maw and Paw, like explicitly, like we've talked about in the past. But you know, there is maybe some stuff to be explored there.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not being cagey about it. I just know that like the way I built the world, you have to dig in certain places to find out about spirituality. And I think that's the thing about Groteth as well. Is that, like even our cast, like our party members, we have a monk and a cleric. And neither of them are super religious in the way they play. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
And I think that's telling of like how even the world is kind of, because I mean, you have all kinds of people that say they're religious or came up with an upbringing and stuff like that. So it just depends, you know? But I think that's part of the mystery as well. Is like, that's what the cast keeps asking, like, what is the deal with Ma and Pa?
You know what else I want to know?
What is that,
Chris? You didn't submit a question in Discord,
okay,
so
we
can't answer it.
I'm just thinking about, you know, like, this is a way, way back thing. I don't remember who we were fighting, but every time we got knocked out, there were, like, voices talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, we never got any answers to that. That's another puzzle piece.
Another puzzle piece.
Because in this group, everything.
It won't fit.
Yeah. It's not an edge piece. I don't know. Well, speaking of which, there's somewhat a related question from Shell asking, was there ever a moment in both campaigns where you were seriously considering killing off a player because they made you so angry with something they did in character? And I think related to that, I think Emily Wemily again had a question that was somewhat similar. It said, have you ever had a monster change its target mid-combat or an enemy change its target mid-combat to avoid killing one of the characters?
Mm. Like saving them? Like
yeah,
purposely
like saving them. Yeah.
Mm.
I think I will say for the changing target one, every round I try to make it make sense who's being attacked, whether it's someone in close proximity to the enemy, someone that's damaged them, you know, if they're maybe further away or if there's something that's drawing attention. I try to make it make sense. So yeah. I don't think I've ever pulled away from someone intentionally unless there was a, like some kind of motivation or reason for them to do that.
Yeah, a diversion of some sort. Go ahead.
But you also roll sometimes to see
if it needs to be more randomized.
Yeah, I'll assign everyone a number and then just roll a die to see who they go after. That's if there is no motivation, if it's just like...
Or which direction they go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's a weighing game of the balancing the scales of like, you don't want to TPK the group every time, but if you want it to be high risks and high reward, then yeah, sometimes you need to knock them down to zero hit points. Cause like, it depends on like, if you're a party at level one, you're going up against a dragon, like things are going to happen. Like party's going to die. But use it as a narrative device rather than just like punishing you, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. to me, I don't know. To me, it would all go back to the story of it. And it's like if a character died, then they would just need a narrative, you know, workaround for it.
Another thing on top of that is like if there is a player, and I've heard many stories like this, that is testing the fates. Like there's a lava pool in front of them and they're like, I'm going to jump in the lava pool. You take, mm-hmm. you know, 10d10 fire damage.
Or if there's a boiling pool of blood.
Exactly what I was thinking of. But yeah, I mean, like, don't hold back. Like, if they're going to, you know, test you, like, mm-hmm. them's the rules.
There's a great Netflix anime series called Delicious in Dungeon. I don't know if either of you watches it.
Yeah.
But the whole premise of that show is that a party goes in to fight or goes up against a dragon to fight it. And one of the party members gets eaten by the dragon and the rest of them are killed and then, you know, resurrected. So then they have to go back into the dungeon to find the dragon to kill it and save their partially digested party member to resurrect them. So it's kind of the same thing where it's like, that's almost like if you have a party member die, then it's like that becomes part of the story and you have to go and try to deal with the aftermath of that. I think that that anime is really good because it deals with party, like in D&D parlance, like a party wiping and then getting resurrected.
Yeah.
And what does it cost and what does it involve and all of that. It's really highly recommended if you're not watching it. Delicious in Dungeon.
And that's why you always have an extra character sheet with you. Because you never know.
Be ready to go. Oh, but then following up back to what Shell asked, was there ever a moment where seriously considering killing off a player because they did something to make you angry, they did while in character? I don't think that's ever come up.
In these campaigns?
Yeah, in these two campaigns.
I think you've wanted to do damage for sure.
But like, that was to Chris, not to his character.
You know what I mean? Like, even if you're a DM, like, you want to have fun too. And so, like, if you roll a bunch of ones, like, yeah, it can be funny at first, but like, every once in a while, you're like, okay, it'd be nice to get like a nat 20
yeah,
now.
Yeah, why not? I think, you know, that's kind of like the DM thing to play up that rivalry, like that, you know, that me versus you kind of thing. You know, in the end, you're all playing together, you're all on the same team, but trying to play up that watch out, I'm gonna hurt you.
Yeah, it can be fun to play that. Even role playing too, it's fun to play that. You know what I mean? Like if you're the big bad or something like that. But it's funny to see that happen at tables, like the DM enjoying that sense of not competition, but you know what I mean. There is a sense of rivalry, like you say.
I also find it more entertaining when combat is like hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's the combat where we did really well and things are, like, cool and, like, oh, yeah, we cast the right spells, we prepped correctly, we're all moving, and that's really fun when we're just like, oh, yeah, look how good we did. And then it's also fun whenever it's like, oh, crap, we are getting our butts handed to us and this is, like, we're barely coming by. And that's satisfying too, because it's like you know, to come out of it on the other side, you're like, yeah, that was tough. Cool.
We made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. It's a thing you shared. Yeah. You know, sharing a comment.
But that middle ground of like, yeah, this was just like hitting sticks at each other until someone falls down is like less exciting.
I think that's the difference between like setting up an encounter with just stat blocks and hitting things, you know, versus like every creature has a motive and tactics and reasons that they're there. Mm-hmm. I think that really helps flesh it out a bit more. And it seems more realistic, you know, like you were saying, you want to have there to be a flow between how the combat, like who you're focusing on, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Again, going back to last episode, that's why I was very excited to have Mateed outside of the Vampspire. Like, I had that idea, like, ooh, I'll have one of the Sfratu become mist, go outside and then try to drown Mateed or knock Mateed out of the sky.
Yeah.
It didn't end up working out, but it's like fun to try to raise the stakes like that.
Yeah.
All right, I think that's about it for this episode of Second Wind. Again, if you're watching this, thank you so much for supporting the show and for watching the content we make, and we'll see you next week.
And happy birthday to you as well.
Oh. Bye.